And once you locked the hatch, you were out with those same people for those, you know, those 110 days. So, you know, as a leader on board the submarine, you couldn't take a day off. You couldn't, you know, get a beer after a long day. You couldn't, you know, take the weekend and sleep in. It was a 24/7 type of leadership.
That is John S. Rennie, author of the book All in the Same Boat. So where do you learn about leadership? Probably in business school and in companies. Well, John's story is a bit different. John is a former U.S. Navy nuclear submarine officer who made 7 deployments during the end of the Cold War. And today, John is with us to talk about what he learned about leadership thousands of miles below surface. Make sure to listen through as John is going to reveal how his time in the Navy created his view on leadership. But first, the intro. Welcome to the Your Trainee Program podcast. My name is Priyesh, the host of the Your Trainee Program podcast. Your Trainee Program is about making personal development accessible for you. Don't forget to subscribe on yourtraineeprogram.com and receive the free Effective Conversations cheat sheet, which will give you some tools to manage every conversation your way. And as you might have seen, we're also on Spotify right now. So just to make things more easy for you, so now you can listen to this podcast while walking your dogs or doing chores you don't even like. If you like this podcast and it helps you in any kind of way, please leave a rating behind on Spotify. It's really easy and takes just one click on the stars. And of course, hit the 5 stars if you like it. So today we will be talking about what we can learn in leadership from a former U.S. Navy officer. We will be talking about why leadership is a people business and that being humble is a major superpower. You already heard him before the intro. His name is John S. Rennie and he is a business leader, speaker, podcaster and also a best-selling author. And we will be talking about his book All in the Same Boat. So let's dive into the conversation John and I had. Hi, John. Good afternoon. It's good to have you here.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great that you could be here on this short notice. We're very interested in your story, so that's very nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's fun to connect and it's fun to talk about this stuff. So I'm really honored to be on the podcast.
Thank you very much. Why don't you just take a second to introduce yourself a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah. My name is John Rennie and I am a business leader. I run a company. I started a company about 6 years ago, a manufacturing company called Peak Demand. We manufacture products for the electrical industry, but I have been a leader for more than 30 years. I started my career as a submarine officer in the U.S. Navy. And then I left the Navy. I spent 22 years in corporate America. I ran 8 different manufacturing operations throughout North America. And then, you know, before I started my own company, and I write on leadership issues. I talk on leadership issues. I've written 2 best-selling books on leadership topics, but I enjoy the subject of leadership. I've been doing it for 30 years and I'm probably more of a practitioner than I am a theoretical guy. So I've actually been in the trenches and doing it. So yeah, so I love to talk about leadership topics, entrepreneurial topics, things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. And speaking of that, your story is kind of special, right? Because your story starts where not a lot of people come, deep down below the levels, below the surface, inside the ocean. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's sort of a unique place to learn leadership. But I started my career as a naval officer on a submarine. I was on the USS Tennessee out of Kings Bay, Georgia, which is in the southeast of the United States. And this was during the Cold War. So back when the U.S. and its allies were in this standoff between the Soviet Union, one of the things was strategic missiles pointed at each other, you know, kind of preventing a nuclear war just through deterrence, and we were part of that deterrent asset. So we carried missiles, and we sat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and ready to launch our missiles if need be. So it was a very interesting place to learn leadership, because when we deployed, there'd be 155 men and we'd be gone for, you know, 90 to 110 day, 110 days at a time. And once you locked the hatch, you were out with those same people for those, you know, those 110 days. So, you know, as a leader on board the submarine, you couldn't take a day off. You couldn't, you know, get a beer after a long day. You couldn't, you know, take the weekend and sleep in. It was a 24/7 type of leadership role. And I did that for 5 years. And during that time, I made seven deployments during that time. So I spent a grand total of 2 years of my life under the surface of the ocean leading men. And in this case, it was an all-male crew back then. Now there are women on submarines too, but basically leading men under the ocean for 2 years of my life. So it's kind of an interesting place to learn leadership. And actually the lessons I learned, I've been practicing in the different businesses I've run over the past 30 years.
Yeah, that's very special because, like I said, me, myself, I came from business school, and that's where my theoretical foundation started. And this is very another way to learn leadership, I guess. Can you take us into the similarities of leadership and what you learned during your time as a submariner and how you translate that to business and leadership?
Yeah, so you know, the one thing that was that I learned on the boats was that, you know, people matter. You know, leadership. And I like to say in my books, I say leadership is a people business. It's all about building relationships with the people that you are leading. You have to know your employees. You have to know, you know, what motivates them, what excites them, what are their hopes and dreams. And you know, we did that on the submarine only. You know, not on purpose. It was just sort of natural. You were stuck with the same people. We stood these watches, these 6-hour watches, in these small areas on the submarine. It would be officers, senior enlisted, junior enlisted, and you'd be in these small spaces, and you'd spend 6 hours together just getting to know that individual for months on end, right? So I knew every story. I knew, like, for the sailors that worked for me, I knew every girlfriend they had. I knew what foods they liked. I knew everything about them. And what was interesting to me is when I left the military and went into the corporate life, that there was no real desire to get to know people. I had bosses that hired me and then I never saw them for, you know, weeks on end, you know. And part of what I learned there was that, you know, that you have to have a relationship with your employees if you want to be an effective leader. And the other thing that was very clear in the Navy was our mission. Our mission was very clear. We knew what we had to do. And on a submarine in the ocean underneath the surface, if you think about it, there's a shared responsibility to operate the submarine effectively, right? So that you could carry out your mission and get home safely. We had a shared responsibility for the success of our mission, but we also had a shared vulnerability. So it didn't matter what your rank was, the most junior sailor could turn the wrong valve and we would all die. So the other thing it did is it gave me an interesting perspective towards the fact that, one, we have to make sure our people know what the mission is. And more importantly, is that the most junior employee in our companies are essential to be able to carry out the mission. So it gave me a better appreciation for everybody in the organization. Whereas what I saw in corporate life was many managers sort of took care of the higher paid employees, but the lower paid employees got kind of treated like, you know, they weren't treated very well. And in fact, the truth of the matter is that every employee is needed if you're going to achieve your mission. So some of those things were just naturally just part of my learning process in this very unique environment.
Yeah, that sounds very different than in business indeed, because you have to spend a lot of time with those people and there's nowhere to go. Like you said, you can't go grab a beer or go to the cafe or somewhere. And in business, right. I really recognize what you just said. There are some leaders and managers, they take on people, but they don't even look after them. They don't even greet them. If they come by them in the elevator, there are some which don't even recognize their own people. Yeah. That seems very disturbing. So I think we found the answer. We need to just lock everybody up.
Well, you could. But it takes a special individual that wants to be locked up for months on a time. But no, I think there's some, so, you know, I mentioned the submarine being fairly small, so there wasn't a lot of space to spread out. And what that meant too was that we shared a lot of common experiences. So we saw the world the same way. So, like, for example, if it got delayed that we couldn't come into port for another week, we all felt it, right? We all had to sacrifice. And we had a similar experience. But when I came into corporate, I realized that, you know, our organizations are so big and so spread out that people in our organization have different experiences about. So, for example, if orders go up, maybe our sales department's excited, right? But our production team is frustrated because they're already very busy. And then our supply chain team is frustrated because the sales team sold something that's very difficult for them to get. So we have these really... Everybody, so one event happens in a company and everybody has a different feeling about it because we don't share this common experience about the business. We're spread out, you know, we're doing our emails, we're Zooming, we're all doing it. So what ends up happening is there tends to be internal conflict within companies because we're not all on the same page. We don't share this common view of the organization. That didn't happen on the submarine. We had a very common view of what was happening and what we needed to do. So part of what I've been doing over the years with these factories is trying to eliminate this us and them attitude that you get in some companies and try to build unity so that we can be effective as a team. So trying to build those shared view of the business, shared view of what was happening in the organization.
Yeah, that sounds very logical because some companies are as great as 10,000 to 100,000 people. So how do you get people to get shared values? What did you learn from there that you also apply in business life?
So one of the big things is to remind people who the enemy is. And when I say enemy, I put that in air quotes, right? So on a submarine, it was very clear, right? So during the Cold War, our enemy, you know, air quotes, was the Soviet Union, right? So we were in this Cold War. But the other enemy we had was seawater. So we were surrounded on all sides by high-pressure ocean, you know, seawater that wanted to get into our submarine, right? It wanted to crush us like a tin can, send us to the bottom of the ocean. There was a constant reminder that the enemy was outside the hull. So when I came to business, I was always surprised that the enemy seemed like it was inside the four walls. Like we were always sniping at each other, marketing and sales and manufacturing and customer service. Everybody was sniping at each other. So one of the things I do when I come into a business is I try to remind everybody who the enemy is. In fact, kind of one of the fun things I do, like I do all employee meetings every month and I talk about the business and the goals and the direction where we're headed, trying to get everybody on the same page. But one of the fun things I do is I will actually put a face on who our enemy is. And so I remember at my first manufacturing plant, our biggest competitor was a company called Cutler Hammer. And so I found a picture of the CEO of Cutler Hammer and I photoshopped his face under the Darth Vader, you know, helmet, you know, and I reminded them every time. I was like, this is our enemy. We have to beat Cutler Hammer in the marketplace. So the enemy is not marketing. It's not sales. It's not purchasing. It is this guy right here. He is our enemy. We have to beat him. So putting a face on who the enemy is, because it's not that easy in big businesses, right? So we get lost and confused about, you know, priorities and who, you know, who's important and what I should be doing next. On a submarine, it was easy. And so I try to make it easy with my workforce as well.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, and it's like choosing an enemy to unite the others. Is that also what you saw inside those teams and inside those businesses, that did they felt more united if they have one common enemy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it was easy. Once you put a face to the enemy, then it was like, oh, okay, we got to beat these guys in the marketplace, and we all have to work together to beat these guys in the marketplace. So I think that certainly did help. Now, the other thing I would say that was really important is I mentioned on a submarine, everybody knew that their role was vital to the mission, right? Even the most junior sailor knew I couldn't turn this valve. I could kill everybody on this submarine. So one of the things I noticed in corporate is that employees didn't know, they knew their job. They knew how to do their job, but they didn't know how their role in the company apply to the bigger picture, to the mission of the organization. So one of the things I learned I had to do was to connect every employee to what their job, the job that they were doing, and how that led to the greater goals of the business. And what Ken Blanchard is a leadership author, and he talks about worthwhile work. So employees want to know that they're doing something that's worthwhile. And, you know, what do we want as human beings? We want to know we belong, and we want to know that what we're doing is important, right? So one of the things that I do is I try to, again, build a sense of unity around a mission, right? But also make sure that everybody knows that their job there is essential to the mission. And so I'll tell you this, I was running a company that made circuit breakers for electrical systems, right? And so when I talked to the employees, I said, what do you do here? And he said, well, I stamp this part. I plate this part. I machine this part. And I was like, yeah, but what does that part do? I would ask them. And they said, well, I don't know. It goes to Joe. And then Joe puts it in this bigger assembly. And well, I asked Joe, what do you do? He goes, well, I make it this assembly and I give it to Sam. You know, but they didn't really know what it did. So in all employee meetings, I started talking about where these circuit breakers are used. I said, the work that you're doing is powering hospitals. You're saving lives. You're powering schools. You're powering a supermarket down the street. I connected the work they were doing to the greater good of society, and that we were keeping the lights on. Our mission was to keep the lights on. And then when you almost saw a sense of pride in the organization after I connected what the work that they did to the overall good that we were doing to society. And it was interesting. You see people stand up straighter. They're proud of their work, and they would tell their families, you know, that I don't know if you know this or not, but what I do, you know, keeps the lights on at the local hospital, you know? And so I would actually talk about what customers are using our products and what big projects they're working on. We're supplying products to a brand new airport they're building in Saudi Arabia. And they're like, Saudi Arabia, where's that? You know, and let's look at this pic, you know, so, you know, get them excited about what we were doing in the world, not just plating a part or punching a part, but they were actually, you know, creating something big. So connect them to the big picture. And that was really important.
Yeah, I see. I have to think about the Kennedy example. I'm not sure if it was President Kennedy, but who asked the janitor at NASA what he was doing. And he was telling him, sir, I'm helping to put a man on the moon.
Yes, and, yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah, so my answer maybe 5 years ago would be, I'm just cleaning here and I'm doing this toilet. And after I'm done with the toilet, I'm going to do with the sink. Right. But this janitor said directly to him, sir, I'm putting a man on the moon. So that's really powerful to put someone, to tie someone to your mission statement as a company.
Yeah, it really is, because we want to do something that's important as people, right? And we want to know how our work is connected to the bigger picture. And especially, again, I think it's really, I always put myself in employees' shoes. They want to go home. They're a father, they're a mother. They're going to go home and they're going to talk to their children. They're going to talk to their parents. You know, what are they going to tell them about what they do for a living? What are they going to talk about their job? So it's easy if you're like, well, I starred in this movie, you know, this great movie, or I cured cancer, or, you know, we always think that there's those people that do great things and then there's everybody else. But the thing is, everybody is doing great things. And I think our job as leaders is to help people understand that the work that they're doing is vitally important and they are doing great things. And I think it gives people a sense of pride. It helps them, you know, show their families what they do. I don't just work in a factory. I help keep the lights on. It's a different mindset, you know. I'm helping put a person on the moon. That's a different mindset than I clean toilets, right? So I think that's what we need to do is connect people to the bigger mission.
Yeah, and then you'll be sure that they will jump out of their bed 1 hour before their alarm clocks goes off to go to their work, because it's that important to them.
Yeah, exactly.
John, you also mentioned the term vulnerability. Can you reflect a bit on the term and how it applied during your time in the Navy?
Yeah, I mean, in the case of a submarine crew, a submarine out at sea in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, what I mean by vulnerability is like if something went bad, it wouldn't just be one person, it would be the entire team, right? We'd all be lost. I mean, a submarine sinks, it's, or, you know, goes below a test depth. It's not a good situation, right? Everybody dies. And you can look throughout history of submarine accidents. It's very rare that there's any survivors from a submarine accident. So that fact that we were vulnerable, which meant that it didn't matter if you were the captain or you were the youngest, you know, seaman recruit just coming into first time on a submarine, we shared that vulnerability. We all could, you know, we were all at risk. And what I noticed was when I came to corporate is that it's not the same way, right? The higher up employees were less vulnerable than the shop floor, manufacturing shop floor employees. Well, think about when something happens and we have to do a headcount reduction, what ends up happening? Well, typically the more junior employees, with lower salaries, they all are at risk, right? You know, we laid off 50 people today, right? And the guys in the corner office, you know, they still get their salary, they still get their bonus. In fact, they might get a bigger bonus because they laid off 50 people. There isn't a high level of shared vulnerability in businesses. The higher ups get better privileges than the people below. And so one of the things I try to do when I take over a business is try to eliminate special privileges for any individual. So I think, like, give you an example. I took over a factory once in North Carolina, and the first thing I did was I parked my car, and I noticed there was assigned parking for all the managers. In fact, I had an assigned parking spot. I was the new general manager, purchasing manager, sales manager. They all had this. And so I walked in the door. I met my, you know, soon to be assistant. And I said to her, I said, who's the head of maintenance here? I said, oh, this guy right here. I said, well, can you bring him out here? And he comes out, and I said, look, do me a favor. Let's go back. You got some paint back there? He's like, yeah. I said, get a can of paint and a brush. Let's go out to the parking lot. And we painted over all of the parking spots for the assigned parking spots for managers. And the message I was sending, and of course, the rumor mill is great because every employee heard that I did that on my first day. And so the point is, the message was that there's no special privileges for managers. I'm the general manager, but I am no more important to this business than the guy on the shop floor, you know, welding that part or grinding that part or plating that part. We are all in this together. We are in a shared state. I'm no more important than anyone. In fact, I'm least important because I'm not adding any value to our product. You know, the person on the factory floor, you're adding value to this product. I literally am an admin person in a corner. You're more important than me, actually. So why should I get a special parking spot? So I think, you know, eliminating special perks for certain people, I think, or make it merit-based, right? So employee of the month gets a parking spot or something that's more merit-based and less about your position. I think I try to eliminate those things.
Yeah, that's a great example. I'm curious because this sounds very noble, right? You just want to better the company culture, but there must also have been some resistance, maybe from top level managers. Can you reflect on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be that, right? There's always going to be the people that took the job because they wanted the office, they wanted the title, they wanted the bonus or the perks. And to be honest with you, those people don't last very long in my organization because I don't want them working for me. I really want people that are dedicated to the mission and know their role in the organization is to support the people that are adding value to our product. And what do I mean? So in a factory, right, the people who add value is easy. It's the people on the factory floor. They're making things. But if you think about a school, right, who are the people adding value? It's the teachers, the people in the classroom, not the administrative team. It's the people in the classroom. Talk about a call center, right? It's not the manager in the corner office watching over how many hours everybody's been on a call. They are not important. The people who are important are the people on the phone, physically talking to customers. In a hotel, it's going to be the people cleaning the rooms. It's going to be the people working the front desk. Those are the people that are most important. And so I think, you know, I stress that in my with my management teams, and I look for managers that have that same mindset. So if you don't have that mindset, if you're just in it for yourself, you typically don't last very long in my companies.
Yeah, it's more about adding value to your customer and to the process instead of focusing on an admin and other roles which aren't actually that which are there to support.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because someone would say, well, if you're because we are selfish and we're also as humans, we're selfish. We want the best for our families and we want the best in our paychecks and we want to take care of our families as well. But one of the things I've learned over the years is that if you put others first, right, and you run from maybe a servant leadership type of mindset, is that you end up being very successful in your career. But there's some people who just focus on the money and then they never achieve it. And there's others that focus on the business and the organization, the people, and the results come, you know, they always do. And I think that's the different shift that I want to see leaders do, is focus on the results and the success comes. If you just focus on the success, you've heard this expression probably, dress for the job you want, not the job you have. I've heard that throughout my career. I've always said that, I don't believe in that. I do the job that you have really well, right? And then the future will open up. My wife always laughed at me. She said, throughout your career, you've been dragged kicking and screaming up the corporate ladder. So I never wanted a promotion. I never wanted it, but my businesses kept doing well and they kept giving me more and more responsibility. So take care of the little things and you're going to get bigger opportunities.
Yeah, I can really reflect on that because in the past 10 years, I have seen a lot of leaders, some of them which were really selfish and some of them who were really taking care of you and were really serving you. And the leaders which you remember most are the last category. They care about you. They care about your progress. They care about your reports. They care about everything. And what you also said in the beginning, it's more than a business transaction. They have an interest in you as a human being. And that is a feeling which is undescribable because you just, like I said earlier, you just jump out of bed to get to work, to get working for them because you want to work for them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the other thing, dress code is kind of funny. I would just say one thing on this. If you look, this is an audio, but we're actually seeing each other on video. And what you'll see is that is somebody who doesn't, I dress in a t-shirt, I wear boots, I wear jeans. And the reason I do it is on purpose because I want to relate to the employees that work for me. And most of my employees dress this way as well. One of the things I saw early in my career, I was an engineer. When I first was hired as an engineer at a very large company, ABB, large global company, I was hired as an engineer. And we were forced in the office to wear ties back then. So we all had to wear ties. And every time I went on the shop floor to meet with employees to talk about a project we were working on or a part I'm having them, I looked different than the person I was talking to. And so automatically there's an us and them that's built into the way you dress even. And so the nickname they had for us, the people that worked in the office, the people on the shop floor called the people in the office, they called us ties because we wore ties all the time. And so automatically there's two groups of people. It's the real, what the people on the factory floor would say, the people that worked hard and then the ties, and I was a tie back then. And so, I think that as bosses, we have to think about that. How are we dressed and what message does that send to our people? What kind of car do we show up to work with? So I've always dreamed of having a Porsche. I always thought that that's what I would want to have someday, but I will never own a Porsche so long as I'm running a manufacturing plant, because I don't think it shows it doesn't show things correctly when you show up in a Porsche and your other employees are driving used cars that they're working hard to maintain and keep running. So how you dress, how you show up, these things matter in leadership. The little things really do matter.
So you must be really waiting for retirement.
Yeah, now, exactly.
Just to elaborate on that a little bit, I can really see that point because also with we're seeing each other. I'm wearing a regular shirt, and I can remember when I went to a management trainee special, like a 1 week training. There were I was there, and there were like five or six or seven other people, top level managers, also from big companies which earn big dollars probably. And for me, that was the first time I was packing my bag the day before. And usually I would wear a shirt and a jacket so that I would feel fine and I wouldn't feel disconnected with other people. But all of a sudden, for me at that moment, I was really about what other people were thinking of me. I was always doing what other people expected of me. Yes. And what I did that day is I just I took out the shirt and the jacket, and I just went there with a couple of shirts, with the jeans, and just with sneakers even. And it was really a harsh lesson for me, because on the inside I was sweating, and in my head I was like, oh, what if they're not going to accept me, and things like that. And when I came there, I saw the exact same with the other guys and girls there. They were all wearing, it's like it was a uniform or something like that. They were all wearing shirts and a jacket. And the next day, because it was a week long, everybody was wearing sneakers, jeans, and just a shirt. So we spend a lot of time worrying about what other people think about us. And we spend too little time being around self, our authentic self.
Yeah, you just hit the nail on the head. Authenticity is really, really important in leadership. I think it's one of those things that I think is not talked about enough, is being authentic. And, you know, people can tell when you're being fake and when you're being phony, you know, you know, like I was in corporate America for 22 years, and, you know, when you're pulling the corporate line, well, we have to get this done because this will help us, you know, and when you pull the party line, everybody knows that your heart's not in it. You're just reading from a script, and they're just like, okay, you know, but I mean, if you say, look, guys, company wants us to do this, I don't necessarily agree with it, right? But here's where I think it makes sense. And this is going to help us moving forward. That's an authentic response to a directive from corporate that you may not necessarily agree with, but you have to implement. So is that people trust you, that I trust you because you're not just going to give us a line that came from upper management. You're going to think about it yourself. You're going to think about how it impacts us and give us the real skinny. We can trust you because we've seen you and you're authentic. You give us your true emotions, and you don't, you know, you're not pretending to be, you know, a version of a manager, a pretend version of a manager. You're a real person. I'll give you this story. I was running a manufacturing plant on 9/11 when the terrorist attack happened in New York and in Washington, D.C. And my assistant at the time said, hey, come to the break room. There's something happening in New York City. And I walked in just as the second plane hit the tower. And so none of my employees knew what was going on. They're out on the shop floor. They're working. This was, you know, this was a September morning, you know, and all of a sudden this happened. So I had to bring everybody together in my entire workforce, 140 employees, and tell them that there's a major terrorist attack happening in the United States, right, you know, at that moment. And guess what? I didn't have a prepared speech because I just witnessed, you know, this event happening. And I knew that everybody would be worried and concerned. And, you know, I was very emotional. I told them what happened. I told them to shut down their machines and to go into the break room, watch what's going on, that I don't know what's going to happen or what it means. But, you know, and I think that's the way we need to be. We have to have natural responses to different things versus trying to have this canned approach to leadership. It's you're leading people and you're a person, right? Be authentic, be your true self.
Yeah, that's a real life lesson over there, because we, especially when we come from college, I can relate to that. You have just something in your head which tells you have to be like this, or you have to be like mm-hmm. that, or you have to fit in, or you can't say this because it's offensive. And the stories we keep telling ourselves are so depressing almost. And if I look at myself, I spent more time unlearning stuff which I've learned in my past and in my in my youth than learning stuff. But it's definitely it's so important in management, in leadership, but also in being a normal employee of a company, because there's nothing more valuable. Also, if I talk to people, and not other executives or other managers, but just to people, I always appreciate the authenticity. If they tell you, will see in 1 second if they are telling you what you want to hear. But that's not why you want to work with people. It's because they're an individual, because they have their own opinion, because it's because they have a different view of life and on the business. Yeah. That's what's most valuable, actually. So yeah, I can really relate to that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I tell people that, you know, don't go into leadership if you don't like people. It's all about people and relationships. It's, you know, how do you have a good marriage? Well, you have a good relationship with your spouse. How do you become a good father or a good mother? You have a relationship with your children. How do you become a good, you know, how are you a good son? Or daughter. You have a great relationship with your parents. This is what leadership is. The stuff that you learned in as a kid are the things that actually make you effective as an adult. And it's really some basic things. You know, I always talk about, I had an employee tell me one time, she said, you're in all my career, you've been my most favorite boss. And I said to her, her name was Terry. I said, Terry, why? Like, what makes me your favorite boss? And she's like me. She was older, in her 50s. And I said, what makes me your favorite boss over the years? And she said, you say please and thank you, and you smile. And I'm like, that's it? I learned that from my mom. I learned that from my mother. I didn't learn that in business school. I have all these advanced degrees. I never learned any of that, you know? So, but those are some basic things that many bosses don't do. They're like, well, I'm the boss. I don't have to be nice. Okay. You know, but, you know, are you going to be effective? Do you want to be effective? Well, treat people with respect. I mean, just like you would in real life.
Yeah. And I've even seen worse, because as people are climbing the corporate ladder, they get so busy with stuff which doesn't even matter that it's too much of a hassle for them just to say good morning to someone, because they're so busy and so laser focused on something which probably isn't the most important thing on their list. It's probably written on top of their list, but in engagement and in management and in engaging with your team, it's probably peanuts. It's just a small word, good morning, two words. Yeah. But it makes such a big effect on people if you can literally see them and value them and tell them that they're valued and important.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really, really important. You know, I say that you'll have more impact if you spend time in the break room, more time in the break room than the boardroom. So more time where your employees are at. And a lot of managers are afraid, to be honest. There's a fear factor. So they're afraid, oh, what if they ask me a question I don't know the answer to? What if they challenge me on something new that I just launched? What if they see that I'm really not that smart? You know, I got this job I got lucky. What if they discover that I don't really know what I'm talking about? So there's this fear, right? So they say, well, instead of putting myself out there and being vulnerable around other employees, right, I'm going to hide in my office or hide in my conference room or hide on conference calls and things. And but it's all based on fear, you know. And so when I'm coaching leaders, I say, you know, you cannot be afraid of employees. You have to get out there and spend time with them. Now, are they going to be brutally honest with you? Yes. And that's great. You're going to get unfiltered feedback, and you need that. So, you know, I always tell leaders, you got to have broad shoulders. You got to be able to take the heat, right? If you're going to do this job, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to be critical of your decision. So you have to be able to listen, like, and just say, you know, someone will tell you, they'll say, John, I know, you put this piece of equipment over here and it's the dumbest idea I've ever seen in the world. And here's the reason why. And you go, you listen, and you look, and you're like, oh, you're right. I never even thought about that. It is a dumb decision, you know? Yeah. I did make a mistake, right? You have to be willing to be vulnerable and to listen. And the other thing, too, I would say this is that, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to hear these, you know, I have employees who are complainers. I don't want to listen to the complainers. They complain, complain, complain. To be honest with you, I've noticed in my career that the people that complain the most care the most. So they want to see things fixed. They want to see things change. They want to see things get better. And so, there's some people that are just a negative, you know, all the time, but there are people that are just generally critical because they want to see good things happen. They care about the mission. They care about the people. They care about. So I want to be out there and hear that feedback. And you can't get that feedback when you're sitting in an office, or on a conference call or what have you. You're not going to, you're not going to hear that raw feedback, and you need that as a boss.
Yeah, it's a kind of a free feedback loop, a direct feedback loop from your
It's a direct feedback loop, yeah. It's unfiltered, it's raw, it's emotional, and you just have to be able to take it as a boss. You have to say, look, if you want to take the responsibility of being a leader, then you have to be responsible to go listen to your employees, and regardless of what they're going to say. Yeah, so you have to be able to just take it. And, you know, and the other thing is, like, most of it's good advice, right? And so you have to take it, you know, lower your pride a little bit, be humble, and listen. Just listen, you know? There's always nuggets there. There are always really good things that, you know, you've got to be careful not to get too, like, oh, well, that's not true. No, just be quiet, listen. Just get the feedback.
Yeah, I think that's one of the hardest skills to master, listening.
Yeah, listening is hard. Because we're always thinking, like, what am I going to say next? You know, we're not even listening. We're thinking about what's the next thing we're going to say, you know, or someone will say something. They have a long paragraph that they're talking to us about, but the one thing in there sets us off, and then we get angry, and we're like thinking about, oh, I'm going to get back on that one issue. And we're not listening. We're not taking that time to be quiet and listen without, you know, building up some sort of emotion inside of us. So just be quiet, be humble, listen. And, you know, some of it may be garbage, right? Some, you know, might be just a complaining employee that, okay, well, all right, that's okay. Thanks for that. But, you know, but sometimes it's just this really good idea. I would say this, the biggest breakthrough ideas I've ever had in my 30 years of leadership have come from somebody who I didn't expect to have the right answer or didn't expect to have an insight like that. It's always been from left field somewhere, you know, like I'm talking to an employee, they'll say something and you go, wow, I didn't even think about that. You know, that is amazing. Like, hold on, I got to write this down. Like, this is such a great idea. So, So the best ideas almost always come from others, not myself. So, and you have to be humble enough to be able to be quiet enough to listen to those things.
Yeah, and I can really relate to it. I also see myself like 5 or maybe 10 years ago sitting there and really exploding at some particular moment. And then 5 minutes later, I was, I was with the broom cleaning my own mess. So that also happens. But you also talk about failures, that you as a manager or a leader need to face fierce failures. Can you reflect on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, and just in general, we don't like to fail as humans, right? We want to be successful. We want to, you know, we never want to trip and fall on our face, right? But when we do trip and fall on our face, we learn. It's like an emotional connection when we fail. Like, we learn something valuable. We spend time thinking about, okay, what just happened there, you know? Like, the great example is, as an entrepreneur, I make sales calls. I visit customers all the time. There's been some times where I go in there and I think I got the great plan. I'm going to present the product and everything's great. And they just look at me and go, no, we're not interested. It's just like emotional. Like, I put everything into this thing. But that's where we really learn, right? That's where we learn, like, okay, somehow my presentation's off here. What do I got to do differently to convince the right people? So when we fail, we get better. So here's the problem in generally in big companies is that we tend to give our more complicated and more difficult assignments to our more senior people. So we say, oh, we've got this big project that's very high visibility. We're going to give it to Jim because Jim's been with the company for 20 years and he's seen these type of projects before. So we do that because we don't want to see failure, right? Because we don't have time for it in business. We got to keep moving. We got to get Joe working on this thing. It's going to be great. He knows what he's doing. And so we give our tough assignments to our senior people. And what happens to the junior people? We give them, you know, we don't give them challenging work. We give them the easy work, the low risk assignments, right? And so our junior people never get those opportunities to showcase their skill sets, to learn through failure, and so what ends up happening is we pigeonhole people. We people are just stuck in certain positions. Well, that person can't move out of that role. He's the only one who knows how to fill out that report. Well, this person's the only one who knows how to call on that customer. This person only. So we keep these people stuck in all these positions because they're the experts, right? And we never give the junior people those opportunities to learn. on the submarine, it was quite different, right? So you're constantly going through sailors. New sailors would come, old sailors would leave. And so you're constantly training. And so one of the things they did with us, you know, as a young junior officer, you stood what was called under instruction watches. So you stood under a senior watch stander, and they would throw every casualty drill, everything, you know, flooding, fire, you know, you name it. They threw everything at you, and you had to be able to respond and react. And of course, you would fail, but you had a senior person right there would stop the drill. Okay, what happened? How'd it go? What'd you do wrong? What can you do better? So we had this thing called control failure, where we would learn our jobs by failing in a controlled circumstance. So we need to do more of that with junior employees, younger employees coming to our business. Give them the opportunity to do difficult things under supervision, where they get a chance to have some controlled failure, where they make a mistake. They get that emotional connection to, oh, shoot. You can't do that. You know, this is why. I give you an example. I have a very young employee working for me now. He does my customer quotes. And I purposely don't over supervise him. I'm letting him learn the products and make some mistakes, because they're low risk mistakes. He's quoting a $5,000 order, right? He makes a mistake. The customer catches it, and he says, "Oh, I quoted the wrong thing." And I was like, "Well, why'd you quote the wrong thing?" "Because I was thinking about this and not this." I go, "Ha ha! What do you need to learn from that?" And so give people an opportunity when it's a low risk situation to make some mistakes, because that's when you learn, is when you make mistakes. So failure is a powerful teaching tool, and we tend to take it away from people. We're going to control everything because we don't have any time for mistakes. And I think that's a bad way to lead. I think you have to let people make mistakes.
Yeah, this reminds me a little bit also on to the Air Force industry. If you want to become a pilot, you have to fly in a simulator. And in that simulator, everything is going wrong. You're going to crash. You're going to crash like 10,000 times. But the funny thing is, I studied health economics. So we were learning from that industry, because what you see is that those pilots or pilots to be learn a lot from making mistakes, for pushing the right buttons or not controlling their steering wheel enough. And in the medicine world, we were also looking at why we're doing certain stuff a lot of time, like operations and stuff in surgery. And the only thing you cannot practice, of course, on living people, because the stakes are really high.
It's true.
Yeah, but what you see is that by failing and by setting up to fail, actually, not just only failing, but taking it in your process and in your learning experience, you see that people are very more keen to learn about it, and they learn much faster from their own mistakes. And it's quite funny how that works. So how can we implement that into business? Because that also asks something of leaders like us, right? It can be challenging. It can be scary because, like you just said, you don't have the time. You don't have the money to fill. Yeah. This project needs to be filed today.
Yeah. Well, I think look for those opportunities where you can give young leaders opportunities to do projects, the lead part of projects, so do something that stretches them, and that you can kind of keep an eye on, you know. I do look for kind of low risk, you know, like I said, the employee I have right now doing quotes, they're $5,000. You make some mistake, it's not going to be the end of my company, right? So I think it's great for him to practice and then make a few mistakes. So find those kind of low risk or lower visibility things to get people to, you know, to get a chance to learn, right? And then, you know, add some more risk to it. And the other thing too is it gives you a chance to evaluate, not only for them to learn, but for you to learn what they're capable of. So you're like, well, that really worked out okay. So I'm going to give her a bigger project, and then I'm going to see how she does with that. Wow, that worked out okay too. I'm going to give her another big project, right? So I think we, you know, give them opportunities where they can make a mistake without, you know, affecting your mission. But then, you know, it's two things. One is they learn a new skill, and two, you learn what they're capable of. It's a two-way street that it's really important. So I'm always looking for opportunities to give my potential leaders a chance to lead. just a small segment of a project, maybe a special project where, like I had one, I remember one factory I had a young marketing person that I thought had some capabilities to kind of move in leadership, and I wanted to see the way they thought. So I said, I need you to do an analysis of our pricing. Where are we getting the biggest bang for the buck? Where are we not effective in our pricing? You know, give me an analysis of our pricing performance. And he was somebody I thought could be a marketing manager in the future. And I want to see his thought process behind, you know, how we did pricing and how he would analyze pricing. And first of all, he missed delivering the report to me several times. So he missed his delivery. And then when he did the delivery and he presented it to me, it was a very basic view of the world. It wasn't a very deep thinking or deep analysis. And so for me, it was like, okay, well, I'm glad I did that, because I don't think this person's capable of doing the big job, you know, of a marketing manager. If he doesn't really necessarily, he's not thinking out of the box. He's not thinking creatively. He's not thinking, how can I maximize the profits to the company by pricing strategy? So I was like, all right, well, he's in a good role. He's probably not ready for that next role right now. So it was good for me to learn that from him. So sometimes our employees they're not ready for the next level, and that's okay too, you know, but you need to know that. You can't, otherwise, what if I promoted him without doing that little project, right? I would have had a major failure on my hands. So give them small opportunities to showcase their skills. And then, hey, if it works out, then maybe give them another one. And you know, I think you learn a lot through those.
Yeah, but and on the other side, he might be overwhelmed and burned out in a couple of weeks. So that's it works two way, of course. And also, yeah, I think exactly. it makes a company less dependable on yourself, because as a leader and as a business owner, you started it, you nurtured it. It's your baby, it's your child. And sometimes it's hard to give something something like your child away. And that makes it very difficult also for businesses and business owners to grow, of course. So you just have to face failure. It's part of the experience, and it also really boosts your learning.
It really is important. Yeah, absolutely is important that we do this. I don't know. There's a quote I was gonna look up, but I can't quote it by, you know, exactly word for word. But Lao Tzu said that a leader is best when people hardly know who he is or who they are. And at the end of the day, they said, we did it ourselves. So I think what I hope to do as a leader is not be the person that everybody goes to for all the answers, but that I'm there empowering people to do things on their own. And when I do that, when I've done that, and I have an engaged workforce that's making things happen without my involvement, then I've truly achieved what I think leadership is all about, is empowering and motivating a group of people to do great things and not being the center of attention. In fact, just the opposite. I'm just there when things get, you know, resolving conflicts, providing what the team needs at the time in terms of assets and equipment and what have you. But my job is to pretty much stay out of the way and make sure that, you know, things are running smoothly. And a lot of leaders want to be the center of attention, have all the answers, but you're limited, right, to your own personal skills. I always say the wisdom of a team is so much greater than the ideas of one micromanager, right? So we tend to think that we, as leaders, we have to have all the answers, but you know what? Our employees have the answers. Our job is to get the best out of all of them.
Yeah, that's great. Just to round up, John, because we're almost over the time, I see. And I'm just getting so enthusiastic about this talk with you, because I'm sharing a lot of the values which are unraveling right now. But what is, in your opinion, you already have a very long career, you're very experienced. What, in your opinion, is the most important interpersonal skill in becoming successful?
Yeah, that's a great question. The interpersonal skill, I think, is, I think for me at least, it's been the idea of knowing that you don't have to have all the answers, that I think when you come to a leadership position and you're willing to be humble, to listen, to solicit ideas from talented people around you, and to take those best of those ideas and make that a reality, that's been my entire career. It's always been about listening and trying to find the best ideas from the people that work for me, and implementing those ideas and making those things happen. And that's been led to my success, you know, throughout my career. And when it's a limiting belief to think that you have to have all the answers. And if you go into work with that mindset as a boss, then you might have some success. You might have a great, you know, you might have a great degree, and you might have a lot of expertise, and you can get a certain level. But if you want to go to the next level, you really have to tap into the wisdom, the collective wisdom of your team. That's where the real next level comes from when it comes to leadership.
Thank you. Thank you for that, John. John, I want to thank you for your time on the podcast and sharing your wisdom. Do tell us where we can find your book, because you wrote a wonderful book. You wrote multiple books, but tell us about your latest book.
Yeah. So if you go to johnsrennie.com, you can get access to all of my writings. I've got two books. I got a third book coming out in a month. There's a blog in there. So I write every week an article on leadership. And then, of course, you have links to my podcast, the Deep Leadership Podcast, which I've been running for about 2 years now. And we've got really good guests on there. So we have entrepreneurs, business leaders, military leaders. So we all just talk about leadership. It's all we talk about. It's a great, great show for that. But all the links are there on my website, johnsrennie.com.
Great. I'll make sure to put them in the show notes. And again, I want to thank you for being on the podcast and sharing your wisdom.
Hey, thanks a lot. I enjoyed being here.
That was it today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with John and that you got inspired in terms of leadership. And like John already said, it's not about benefits. It's about actual people. I'd love to hear from you what you took out of this episode and how you are going to try this in real life and in your business. Make sure to state it in the comments, and of course, you can always send me a message. If this is your first time listening to this podcast and you haven't subscribed yet, don't forget to subscribe on the podcast. You can find it on Spotify. And if you like this podcast and it helps you, it would really help me and maybe even the rest of the world, which can benefit from it, if you leave an honest review. Let me know if this helps you out in your daily search for personal development and what you want to see featured in this show. And I'll make sure to get back to you about it. I wish you a pleasant, productive working week. Cheers.